Hello, welcome back to the Bad Boxing Podcast with me, Tris Dixon, trainer Adam Booth, and former WBO Super Featherweight World Champion Alex Arthur. A quick reminder that this is part of the Boxing Life Stories podcast series at the minute, and recently we've got guests up with Tony Bellew, Sugar Hill from the Kronk in Detroit, and with Paul Smith. Guys, last time we caught up with what happened when Usyk fought Chisora, and what happened when Tank fought Leo Sanchez Cruz. This weekend, we have got Uriah Gamboa fighting Devin Haney. Alex, you wanted me to start with you because you said you can't follow Adam Booth when it comes to tactical nous.
That is so untrue. That's what we're saying live, but behind the scenes, of course, we were saying, you know, it's better for Adam to go first, so he sounds like he knows a little bit of what he's talking about. That's what we said.
You can feed him information by going first because he probably hasn't done his homework anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
I will pass it off as my own work. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, just say what he said.
Chris, before we get started though, are we Alex and I? Are we just like the ugly ducklings of your podcast career? Because everyone else gets audio, but we're just audio. Not to take it personally, but I'm taking it personally.
No, you know what we need? I think the best thing for this trio is probably a TV show through BT Sport, Sky Sports, Premier Sport. Someone needs to pick the three of us up. Maybe Premier Sports for the Crawford-Brook bill, but we'll come on to that in a bit.
But we're maybe going to have to start maybe telling a few fibs and stuff if people are going to pick us up. You know, you can't tell that this is a truthful boxing podcast.
Yeah, well,
so we're not putting lipstick on. No lipstick until we're on TV.
And no dodgy underwear, Booth.
God knows what he's wearing on a Zoom call. Let's not even go there. Anyway, look, let's start. Alex, Devin Haney, impressed with him so far?
Let's go. Yeah. You've got to be impressed with him so far. You know, the fact that he started really, you know, he's sort of pro ascension quite quickly, and, you know, the fact that he's trained with his dad, he's been around the block a little bit as well. You hear rumours of him sparring with some of the top flight guys and doing very, very well. He's spent time in gyms all over, down fighting in Mexico and stuff. So you've got to admire that. In terms of his technical ability and his overall development as like a young pro, you know, you can't help but be pretty impressed with some of the stuff that he's done. He's shown some great attributes, and it looks like he can bang a little bit for his weight class, and he's always in fantastic condition. But I think he's still sort of in the really early stages of his sort of professional career, and I think you're probably going to see the best there maybe in a couple of years. I feel a little bad on Gamboa. Well, not I don't feel bad on him because, you know, this is the nature of the sport that we're involved in, but it does seem to me now that they are using him as a little bit of a testing, you know, trial horse to see how good these young fellows coming up are. And of course, tomorrow night you will see Haney and his team basically trying to outdo Tank, in my opinion. You know, so.
Well, Gamboa, now you mentioned him, he's kind of a name, an opponent, isn't he? And at 38 years of age, he surely hasn't got the blistering speed and reflexes that he sort of burst onto the scene with.
That he once had, Well, I mean, you know, he was a massive part of the Cuban, the super powerful Cuban amateur program. And let's not forget, I think this guy was an Olympian at 51 kilograms or something, you know. So when you take his natural size of the size that the Cuban team probably got him down to with starvation and some really nasty training programs in the heat that I've witnessed for myself, I would imagine that the lifespan now of Gamboa is probably no too good. And I would think that he's probably at the very end of his career. He probably had maybe 300-400 amateur bouts, you would imagine. So it's not like he's had a really long, difficult, arduous professional career, but in the amateurs, I'm quite sure he would have had hundreds of bouts. And again, it was at a much lower weight class than what he competes at now. So I think he just lacks in the sort of physical stature to deal with these young, fresh, physically stronger and bigger professionals, yeah.
Adam, Tank stopped Gambo in the 12th round of their fight. Is there any pressure at all on Haney to do a better job than Tank did?
I don't think so. I think people are always going to talk about that. But if I was speaking to Devin Haney, I'd say, no, just do your job. Alex, yeah. I'm going to do what you accuse me of, actually. I'm going to refer back to that Alex's closing shot there, where it's you've got a 21-year-old young world champion who is still developing, hasn't had any serious tests, but in terms of his physical prowess, youth, energy, freshness, yeah, athletic ability, as well as skill sets, I think it's all, every element is too much of a big task for Gamboa. Gamboa's experience, I think, will keep him in there trying to compete, but I don't think he'll have much success in that fight because of his age, the accumulation of his amateur career and the amount of fights he had there. It's a very good bit of matchmaking for Devin Haney. So there is no rush. He's 21. He's got a belt. And it's a great division. It's a stacked division. It's the division that everyone's talking about at the moment. And time will show where he sits amongst the rest of them. But for now, I don't think he needs to feel any pressure in getting rid of Gamboa. Just do your job.
Interesting you say about it being a good match then. Do you think it's not a high risk for a low reward? Because obviously no one's picking Gamboa to win. You think it's a case that he, you know, does he have to just show up to win? Why aren't people picking Gamboa? Like, if you say it's a good match, what are you saying it's a good match from a commercial standpoint?
No. I said it's good match. No, I said it's good matchmaking.
Good matchmaking. Yeah. Good matchmaking. Yeah.
I didn't say it was a good matchup. I said it was good matchmaking.
But in what respect? Because it's going to show him something that he hasn't already faced in the pros.
No, it's a name, isn't it? That's his first big name on his record.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Yeah, and someone who's of course shared the ring with, you know, numerous big names now, really, hasn't he? I mean, he actually in spells and spots he done actually reasonably well against Terence Crawford, and he showed flashes of his sort of Cuban brilliance, not a lot, but against Tank, even though he was in the end quite badly beaten up by both guys, he still showed little flashes of his pedigree, didn't he?
When he fought Terence Crawford, if I'm right in thinking this, he hadn't been in the year, hadn't been in the ring for over a year.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And they threw him in with Terence Crawford. Yeah. So you're right in a sense that, you know, he hasn't had any favours done. Because I think when he fought Crawford, was he unbeaten or had he lost one?
Yeah, he was unbeaten.
No, he was unbeaten.
He was unbeaten.
Yeah, he was unbeaten.
Unbeaten. Yeah. And had him boxed for a year because he had those promotional spats, didn't he?
Yeah.
So he got shelved and then thrown in with Terence.
Did they not try and like send him home as well? Did they not like ship him off back and then he sneaked back over? Or was that Rigondo?
But no, I think that was Rigondo. I think Terence didn't. Yeah. I think Gamboa was trying to get out of a promotional agreement, if my memory serves me right. He was trying to get out of a promotional agreement, but had been paid handsomely to stay in it. Wow. It was something like that. But he got shelved, thrown in against Crawford. And yes, he had a good win against, I think, Roman Martinez before getting stopped. But I just think at 21 years of age, and he's got that confidence of youth as well, hasn't he, Haney?
Yeah.
As well as
Mayweather magic in there as well, isn't there? He's been doing pads with Floyd and hanging around with Floyd a little bit, hasn't he?
There's a conflict of interest because Floyd's the wing behind Gervonta Davis's wings now.
Yeah, I think he's hung around that gym for quite a while though, Adam. I think he's been trained by the old fellow as well, old Floyd, and I think he's sparred over there for a while. I think he's hung around quite a bit up there, so he'll picked up loads of stuff for those guys as well, probably. I think he spent a lot of time there over the years, yeah.
You think Gamboa is an unfulfilled talent, or do you think he was destined to get as far as do what he's done, Adam?
Well, I think that I wouldn't go as far as saying he's an unfulfilled talent, because he's certainly achieved quite a bit of success in his career, and more so probably in the amateurs. He probably never ever expected to turn professional anyway, so it's not something he's probably like predestined for himself or even prepared for. I think a lot of these Cuban lads, it comes as a bit of a shock. From what I'm told, I think a lot of their discipline falls away when they get to the States and stuff. You know, they can, they're not controlled under a really strict regime, and you know, they've not got a whole country or dictatorship or whatever it is behind them telling them what to eat and drink and stuff. And I think they go a little bit wayward when they get to the States, and you know, they can eat what they want, and they go to the old buffets and they start having fun and they join in on the booze, and then they start to go a little bit wayward. But in terms of Gamboa's achievements, he's a fantastic champion. He was Olympic gold medalist, and you know, he's been a really good pro. But you can't be forgiven for thinking now that he's just being kind of like used as a stepping stone to, you know, better competition for these younger guys, like Adam said. Yeah.
No, you said it. I didn't say it. You said it.
I said it first, yeah, but you.
Yeah, and Adam looked like he knew what he was talking about. Right,
like most things do us, I say it first and you follow along. That's why I asked
you. The second, Alex, remember, it's the second mouse that gets the cheese.
Brilliant. Listen, are we looking at the four kings of this generation when you look at the winner of Ryan Garcia, Luke Campbell, Devin Haney and Teofimo Lopez?
Adam, you go first. I want the cheese.
At lightweight?
Yeah.
At lightweight? You're talking about the lightweight? Oh, man. I mean,
we got Tank watching in there as well. Sorry, obviously, I said...
No, I was going to say, hang on a second. I wasn't listening to you then because you left out Tank Davis.
Yeah.
And I was watching... It popped up yesterday. It popped up on my TV when he came over and fought Liam Walsh. And he was like, he was 20 or 21 at the time. Yeah. And just looking at, you know, when we spoke last week and we talked about him being like a little Aaron Pryor. And when I watched that fight, he kind of reminds me of a fusion of a little bit like Pernell Whitaker and Aaron Pryor.
I've even thought, Adam, so sorry for jumping in, but I've even thought there's wee flashes of Zab Judah there as well. Sometimes the speed he comes back with his backhand, how he leaps with the right hook. Just wee flashes is Zab Judah as well in that style. Sorry, boss.
Yeah, no. If Lopez moves up to super lightweight, then it has to be Davis. If Lopez stays at lightweight, then really, I mean, it's such a great matchup between those two that it would be a pick.
Do you think that Tank looks like a fully fledged lightweight? When you see Lopez, or you hear his weight for the fight, which I believe on the night of the fight was 153 to Loma's like 140 and a half, if my American contact's telling the truth, and he's right. Tank Davis the other night was apparently 139 and a half, which would mean he'd only gained, was that 9.5 pounds? Compared to like Lopez's like 153. You know, even like looking at Tank and his physical stature and his appearance, and then you even switch over and quickly look at the likes of Lopez and Haney and stuff and Garcia, do you think he's big enough, or do you think that he's just his overall power, like you were saying last week, his explosiveness, his skill set, do you think that's enough to let him hang with those guys?
I would question the one, what did you say, 153?
Yeah.
I would seriously question whether a fighter could put on 23 pound healthily from 130.
Oh no, wait a minute. He was 135, 145, 155.
Oh, sorry.
So he put on 16. Yeah, he put on 18 pounds. Yeah. 18. You know, I can believe that. I know I was pretty bad myself, but Scott Harrison would weigh in at 126 and he'd be 147 on fight night.
And that was a legitimate 147 without anything in his hands or pockets.
No. I mean, me and Scott have got on the scales. I've got on the scales myself. In fact, I think I was once I weighed 130 and I was 152 on fight night. So I know it's definitely possible. I guess it depends how tough the cut is as well and how much water you drop at the end.
There was that horrible example when Arturo Gatti came in and beheaded Joey Gamash as well, wasn't there, in New York, which ended up in the courts.
I wasn't aware of
that weight. If they're the same weight, Davis and Lopez, my heart tells me Davis. My head tells me it's
one of
an
those,
even fight.
Yeah.
My head tells me it's an even fight. If there is more than a, like, if there is a 14-pound difference between the two of them in the ring, that could be the difference.
That's a fact.
Yeah. We're kind of stuck on the lightweights at the moment, aren't we, Tris? Yeah, let me ask you then, Tris. You pick one. You can only pick one out of the current lightweights. Who are you picking?
You'd have to go with Teofimo based on the Lomachenko win and based on there being room for development. He seemed to be so well-rounded in that particular fight. He's also shown that he doesn't mind having a round. He's prepared to have a tear-up in previous fights. But I thought he boxed very intelligently. And it's quite funny because, you know, we talk about cliches. And the one thing that I hate in boxing, one of the things, many things I hate in boxing, is cliches. And one of the cliches you always hear is stars make fights. And Teofimo Lopez said that showed that that's not always the way forwards, because that is doing fighters a disservice. Like, that's saying your style is your style and you can't adapt and you can't follow a game plan or a strategy. Because look at someone like a Tony Bellew, who has been a slugger, but he's also tried to box. And so which style is going to blend with which style? It's down to the individual and down to the strategy, the game plan, and the trainer to lay out that game plan for the fighter to follow. And long story short, I think that Teofimo Lopez can adapt to strategy. So when you say styles make fights, I think he can make fights intriguing, fascinating. He can also win intelligently, and he can also have a row he thinks that is going to be beneficial to him. And so I think he's arguably the most rounded of the lot. Certainly so far.
Alex?
With you. I'm with Tris. Yeah, I'm with Tris.
His size is what bugs me. It's his size. There were rounds in the second half of the fight with Lomachenko, where Lomachenko started getting through to him. There were rounds where Lopez did look a little bit lost in some moments. And Lomachenko was able to stop sort of like drum rolling the pressure a little bit. And that was with a dude that was naturally a lot smaller than him. I don't think Gervonta Davis is that much smaller than him. I don't think the difference is the same as it was with Lomachenko. And I do think that Davis is a much harder puncher at lightweight than Lomachenko as well. Sure. And I think that, and he's got that malevolent attitude about him that reminds me of an Aaron Pryor. A nastiness, something inside him that is immeasurable because it's not his style and it's not his physical makeup. It's actually what he's like inside. Yeah. And that for me is what's making me sway slightly towards Gervonta Davis, that there's just something in him that will only come out when he gets tested by someone as dangerous as Lopez.
I will say, obviously, we talked a lot about Tank and we've talked about Haney today and we talked about Lopez a couple of times now. I'm really looking forward to Ryan Garcia, Luke Campbell.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's a massive test, isn't it, really, for Garcia. I mean, we've never really seen him in with anyone, any note that we think could possibly give him any kind of trouble. So I think Luke Campbell is going to give anyone trouble at that weight class still. I'm not saying he can beat all these guys, but I definitely think that he can give them lots and lots of trouble. And you know, it's still sort of like inking me what Adam just said there. It's not going to leave my mind until I say it. So in terms of Tank, everything Adam said about Tank is a fact, is gospel. He's got this kind of innate fight in him that we've not seen really with anyone else. You know, it's going to come out at some point. But, you know, is he big enough? Do you really think he's big enough, Adam? Because we've not really seen him beat a top flight lightweight yet. You know, super featherweight, there's no one even going to get close to him. So, but yeah, at lightweight, I think it's maybe a different story. I'm not so sure, you know.
Is it? Yeah, I don't know if it's his size, but he hits hard. I think his power is very, and he's a naturally left hand. You know, a lot of southpaws like to fiddle with that left hand. He has so much intent when he throws that left hand. He may not be big, but he hits hard, is what I was saying. He hits hard enough for a lightweight. But you were going to go on to the Tris was go, Alex. Go back to the Campbell Garcia fight, because I've got a very strong opinion on that one.
Yeah, I mean that's a really, really interesting fight. I mean, we've got you know, a guy who is a bit of an internet sensation in the States, who has in flashes looked the part. You've got to say, as much as he kind of annoys me, his personality doesn't come across like a fighter and stuff like that. He's he is what he is. But, you know, he's got blinding hand speed. He sets up his power punches really well. He seems to always find himself in a good position where he can detonate his bigger shots that he clearly works on often. He's obviously joined the Canelo team, so he will be picking little things up there, Adam, as you obviously really well know. If you hang around good fighters, you pick up some of their traits, as long as their stuff fits in with your physiology and it can work for you as well. And, you know, that's probably helping him as well. And it's probably helping his confidence. Not that he lacks any confidence, but it's probably helping him grow in confidence in that area as well. So I think we're going to see a really interesting fight. I'm not too sure Ryan Garcia maybe understands how technically good Luke Campbell is and, you know, how adaptable Luke Campbell is as well. I mean, let's not forget, you know, he gave Lomachenko a decent 12 rounds. And we've seen him put up with Jorge Linares. Even though he was dropped, he showed character, personality. I think his dad was really sick in the build-up to that fight. So Luke Campbell was a massive test for anyone at that weight, I'm sure. And I think that we're going to see something quite interesting that night.
I've thought about that, and I've thought about the genetic flashiness and the genetic ability of Garcia. He's the confidence of youth, the confidence of being around Canelo on a daily basis. I don't think he's had enough fights for what he learns from Canelo to start to show out yet. And I think this is going to be a fight where he gets touched and caught from positions and distances that he hasn't been before. And when I think about Luke's amateur grade, and like you just said, the Linares fight, more so actually than the Lomachenko one, because you can say that Lomachenko was just too small to dominate Luke Campbell. But I know how wicked that left bolo shot to the belly is that Luke Campbell throws. I don't think Ryan Garcia has ever encountered that, amateur or pro. I don't think he's boxed someone as accomplished and as big a southpaw as Luke Campbell. And that element I can't get over. And that element plays out every moment in every round, to the point where it could be totally dominant and one-sided for Luke Campbell, because Garcia, other than trying to just apply emotion and speed on the situation, don't think he has the technical skill set or experience to trouble Luke.
Yeah, and if he does start to get frustrated because he's maybe not hitting the target clean early on, or, you know, he's maybe not finding the range of his jab, because Luke Campbell will, you know, he'll keep that right hand pretty high. He'll try and take away Ryan Garcia's lead hand, which he probably will have success with. If Ryan Garcia starts to overreach and go for the old right hand against the southpaw, if he starts to overreach, he will walk onto that bolo shot. It will touch him under the ribs if he leaves his, you know, too much weight on the front foot when he's going for the right hand. We will see him hit with these shots. Well, like you said, will he be able to cope with that? Will he be able to deal with that? Because, you know, he's never faced anything like that before. So it just made, I mean, it's just so exciting, isn't it, that weight class?
With that one, if you try and visualize how it plays out, look at the level that Campbell has boxed at amateur.
Yeah, yeah.
Add on to that the fight with Linares.
Yeah,
who is one of the slickest lightweights I've seen in a long time.
Yeah,
look on top of that, the grade of Lomachenko.
Yeah,
when it comes to body of work and the level of opposition, there is no comparison. And add into that effective southpaw style. I'm going to say that it'll be a dominant display with potentially a late stoppage for Luke Campbell.
Wow. Right, interesting.
Wow, that's a massive show.
I like that. We've still got a little while. We're in the build-up for that. We're now a week away.
Oh, shit. That was my big finish. What are you doing? That was my big finish.
You've got time. You've got time to change your mind. No, we're going to wrap this up. I just wanted to get your on next week's fight between Brooke and Terence Crawford, which I mentioned at the start. Boxing News called it Mission Impossible 3. In the aftermath of obviously Brooks' attempt Golovkin and Errol Spence. Alex, your initial thoughts on that fight? We'll go into more detail next week, but it's a big ask.
Okay, for cool. Isn't it? Huge, massive, unbelievably big, almost impossible, I would say, yeah. We've got two massive different sides of the spectrum here. We've got possibly the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world against a sort of faded champion for the UK, who my biggest concern isn't Kell Brook's technical ability or anything that he's, you know, that it's maybe gone or he doesn't possess anymore. It's getting back down to 147. Kell Brook is a big dude, man, and it's not going to be easy or fun to get to that weight. And I think that is going to be the biggest factor. As the rounds wear on, if they do wear on, again, I sadly see Kell Brook getting beaten down, getting hurt, possibly taking a couple of knees. If the corner, you know, don't throw in the towel, he might be stopped on his knees or he might just not get back up for the stool.
Okay, Adam, what's your take?
I don't know. What was all that sign language you were giving me then?
I was telling Alex to wrap up.
Oh, come on, man.
Come on.
If Kell Brook were to beat Terence Crawford, it would be a bigger upset than when Lloyd Hannigan beat Don Curry.
Yes.
I have seen Terence Crawford live on a few occasions, and I was there when he fought Kavalauskas last time, and Kavalauskas can punch hard. And the one thing that strikes me about Terence Crawford is he is as mentally strong as any fighter in the world today. And he will malevolently, I can use that word twice now, right? He's very sinister in how he dominates people mentally.
He's a bad
dude. And I think, aside from the fact that he is technically immaculate, I've never seen, with Terence, I've never seen a fighter who looks identical, southpaw and orthodox. Terence Crawford looks identical in both stances and is is like the best in the world from both stances. And add on top of that, he's got this nastiness in him and this mental strength that he'll dominate you with and torture you with. I think it would be a bigger surprise than when Hannigan beat Don Curry.
Wow, so succinct when only 2.5 minutes each. Brilliant. Okay, great. Great little summary. We'll go into more depth on Brook Crawford next week. Guys, thanks for joining me. I can see you guys trying to get a word in edgeways now, but I take this time to wrap it up. Guys, I'll see you guys early next week. We'll be back early next week, I'm sure. Thanks for joining us. Don't forget Boxing Life Stories to check out the interviews with Tony Bellew, Paul Smith and Sugar Hill. Last word, Adam Booth, you're itching. Go on, what?
I'm going to have a hissy fit next week if you cut us off again.
Okay, goodbye, guys. See you soon.